We're going to go ahead and get started. So thank you for coming to this afternoon talk on human trafficking. My name is Charmaine Brooks. It's a little background. I'm a full-time medical missionary based in Mexico, but I go all over. Got involved in human trafficking years ago. So that's enough you need to know about me. I'll be glad to talk to anyone later, but I want to know about you. So how many healthcare providers do we have in the room? Okay, lots. Okay, great. How many students? Lots. Awesome. How many students who are going into healthcare? Majority. Great. And let's see. Any full-time missionaries here? Okay. Awesome. Anyone who's gone on mission trip short-term? Okay. Great. Great crowd. So this is going to be kind of hitting a little bit of each of these topics. As you see, the title is Intersection of Healthcare and International Trafficking Persons in Refugee and Migrant Populations. So we're going to kind of talk a little bit about what is human trafficking. A lot of you probably already know that, just to kind of set some definitions. And then a few statistics so you have increased awareness. But then also one of the main things is talk about the refugee and migrant crisis that we've had in parts of the world for many, 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 many years, and then more recent in our own country. And then what is the role of healthcare providers? And we'll also talk a little bit about other people that are here too, because everybody has a role to play. So before we get started, also one more question. Who has seen the movie Sound of Freedom? So okay, about a quarter maybe. Okay. Well, I want to talk, those of you who have seen the movie, I have a question I'm going to ask you at the end. After we talk about it and have some discussion at the end, I want to hear from you guys. I have several people in the room who are big activists in anti-human trafficking work, so thank you all for being here. And I'd like to hear, you know, from you guys. But I want to know, from what you're going to learn today, how does that compare to the movie? What do you think? Okay, so if those of you who haven't seen the movie, if you've seen another human trafficking movie, who's ever seen the movie Taken? Anybody with Liam Neeson, remember that one? Okay. You can think about that, too, because both of those are very real depictions of human trafficking, but might be a little bit different than what we see in the U.S., so we'll talk about that. So also before we get started, another thing is the data disclaimer. There, as you can imagine, human trafficking is very hidden. It's not something that people go around and you can say, hey, I'd like to know who's here being human trafficked, and they raise their hand. So we have a lot of numbers, which we're going to go over, but just remember, they can be off. They could be very underreported because we don't know exact numbers, or they can be inflated because we're assuming there's... The point is, don't get hung up on numbers. There are people that are living in horrible situations right now in what is better known as modern-day slavery, and they need a voice, and we can be their voice. So that's what you got to remember. Because if you look up statistics, or you might hear, even in my own presentation, there might be a couple that are kind of like, I thought you said it was this. It's just because the numbers are hard. So just want to put that out there. Let's start with a definition, get through kind of this kind of part, which just is naming what is and what isn't. So human trafficking, the Trafficking Victims Protection Act was from year 2000, so it's been quite a while now that Bush passed that. It's about recruiting, harboring, transporting, providing, or obtaining a person, an individual, by force, fraud, or coercion for sexual exploitation or labor exploitation. There's one difference. When you have for sexual exploitation only, you do not have to have force, fraud, or coercion. It can be recruiting, harboring, transporting, obtaining, patronizing, soliciting, or advertising for sexual exploitation, but you don't have to prove that they were forced, fraud, or coercion. It's just, that's what it is. And that's important because a lot of times you probably heard in the news, you hear of people that they found, I think recently, who of you have read about or heard about that they found like a child in the basement, teenager, young lady that they had in the basement for a long time, the mom was pimping her out to people who are coming to, you know, buy sex from her, and the mom was allowing this, or a couple that might have gotten a child. You've heard of the people that have been kidnapped, and then they find them. Oh, they were chained in a basement. That is actually considered human trafficking. They didn't transport them. The victim doesn't have to be physically transported, because in those movies we talked about, there are many, many victims that are transported from one country to another, from one state to another, from one city to another. But the trafficking word, to me, is a little, it doesn't it's too defined. It's not broad enough, because it can be that you just have your child in your own house and you're allowing people to come and abuse that child, and you're getting money for that. You're exploiting that child. That is child abuse, obviously, but that's also what we consider human trafficking. So let's throw you little statistics. There's about 25 million people trafficked in the worldwide by some counts. A third of those are under 18 years old. So imagine that. A third of 25 million. It's a lot. Most are girls, about 72% for sex trafficking, 21% in forced labor. And we also know that many people who are trafficked for forced labor, like they're going to work as a nanny in a house. They're going to be a maid in a house. A lot of times, almost close to 100% of the time, they end up being raped by their person who supposedly bought them but's not paying them for them. So it might be a labor trafficking, but they end up doing sex trafficking as well. That happens to a lot of girls. For the boys, and now boys too, but the boys is less for sex trafficking as of today. That might be changing, and more for forced labor, 66%. Why is this such a big deal? Not only is it a big deal ethically and morally on our side, but why is it a big deal for the traffickers? Because it's $150 billion profit. And if you think about it, if you're going to sell a gun, or you're going to sell drugs, you do it one time, that's it, you got the money, you pocket it, now you got to go what? Get more drugs, get more guns to sell. Weapons, you know, they're it's just one time, you sold it. Well, girls and boys who are being trafficked for labor or for sex, every night they're getting money from them. And the ones who are doing labor, all day long, you're getting money from that worker every day, over and over and over. So it's a big profit for those who are involved in this horrible industry. And those of you who are on healthcare know that this is relevant, and for those of you who didn't realize it, it's become such a big deal that to renew your license, you have to have a topic on human trafficking. So this is very important now in this world of hospitals, clinics. Anybody who's wanting to work in the healthcare field does need to have a CME on human trafficking. So I think that's pretty good. So you might be asking yourself, okay, we know slavery's been around forever. Who can tell me when's the first time we heard of slavery in the Bible? Anyone know? Remember?
Sarah.
Yes. Yep. Any other incidents come to mind that you might have remember in the Bible, which is a long time ago? There's Joseph. Any other ones? Those are two big ones. There's slavery from as far back as we can remember. Why now? Why? I mean, we had it in the 1800s where we fought. We had a whole civil war here, right? Why is it now? Why does it seem like it's research? Is it just that it wasn't there and we didn't know about it? Either one, like, or is it really resurfacing as? Well, there's a lot of things going on in our world today. A lot of vulnerability, like with our youth that are being bombarded with so many things. Then the LGBTQ community that's got a lot of issues going on with fighting for their, you know, their gender and feeling depressed. That is a lot with our youth in the U.S. We have a lot of runaways, a lot of people that are just struggling with their identity, struggling with who they are, a lot of depression, anxiety makes them vulnerable. Other vulnerabilities, which are more classic around the world, poverty, conflict, wars, which we're going to talk about. Mental health issues, also on the rise, which we'll talk about that too. Racial disparities, also on the rise. It's things that maybe we fought in years past, maybe for hundreds of years ago, but it's all now happening. There's also the ongoing demand. Like I said, there's some topics you're going to hear right now that could literally take a whole, you could take that topic right to ongoing demand, and you could have a whole talk on that. And some people have given their lives to work on that. Think about it. If there was no demand for a girl to buy her in a prostitution or a brothel or someone's house, if there was no demand for that, we wouldn't have sex slavery. We have it because that's something people want to do. I know a lot of people, when you go to a prostitution house or brothel, you don't even realize that that person, you think they're there on their own volition. I get that. But if we didn't have that demand, we wouldn't have them. So that's one of the big problems. There's a demand for it. And that's often fed by pornography. We had a whole talk on that last year. Some of you might have went to that. There's a reason why right now there's so much resurgence. Let me talk just a moment about children, because I know it's very topic that's near and dear to many of our hearts. Why are the children so uniquely vulnerable? One reason is because they are children. They don't have the judgment. They're very impulsive. Maybe not the wisdom that you have, hopefully, when you're an adult. And so a lot of times our children are being targeted online, as you know, through social media, and even in their within their own peers. So some of that leads to them making decisions. They didn't quite see what was coming. They didn't know that person was pretending to be their boyfriend to then take them to be pimped out. They didn't get that. They thought, oh, he really loves me, when really he was just warming. They call it grooming, getting her to fall in love with him, and then eventually take her and pimp her out to all his friends, and eventually maybe even in a place where you have 30 men every night. Most kids don't, they're not thinking that way. Even if you heard this talk, sometimes they're like, oh, well, that won't happen to me. One thing I'll throw out right here, it's like I said, it's a lot of information, so some of it I'll be like, I should mention this or not. One thing is, when you're looking for a person who you think is a trafficker, you kind of think they're going to look like gangster, all like tattooed up, and they're going to have their pants hanging half down, and they look rough. Not true. It can be a woman. It can be your neighbor. It might be your classmate, because they've gotten so smart in how they recruit people. They realize if a person like that walks up to you and goes, hey, you want to come with me? You're going to be like, whoa, stranger danger. Kids are not going to come. If you're in another country and that kind of person's offering you a job, you're going to like, I don't think so. But if you have your neighbor, you're in Nepal, and your neighbor says, hey, I think your daughter is beautiful, and I know a modeling agent that my daughter went to, and you do know, yeah, her daughter did go, right? She's making great money, and I'm doing wonderful. And you look at her house. Your house is falling apart, barely held together with sticks, no electricity, no running water. And you look at her house, and she's like, she is doing a little better, huh? Well, she's recruiting. She did become part of it. She might under threat, because they're telling her, if you don't get more recruits, we're killing your daughter. She can't tell. Now she's recruiting. Happens all the time, all over the world. That's something that we don't think about. We're thinking you're going to look like a shady character. So just remember, kids are more vulnerable because they don't, you know, they're not going to be as suspicious as we are of someone who looks nice and normal. This slide, it's going to be hard kind of to see on from where you're sitting, but it's just kind of a reminder that there's different reasons. It's not one reason, usually. The majority of the time, it's not one reason why someone's trafficked. They were living in poverty. Just that one reason. Everything else is fine in their life. Usually it's different things. Or maybe they have a dysfunctional family. Could be, but usually it's more things. For example, a lot of times it's in your community, you just don't have the education. You didn't hear about it. You didn't know about it. There's not real support. There's a high crime rate. You're just trying to survive. Then the poverty is a big deal. You know, being hungry will drive you to do things you never thought possible, meaning accept a person's offer to go be a nanny without really knowing if this is legit or not, because you're hungry and it sounds good and this is how I can feed my family. So you get involved in things that many of you sitting here are not hungry. We just had lunch. You'd probably be like, oh, I'm good. I'm okay. You would second guess that if someone offered you a job, not when you're hungry. So these different relationship things in a society kind of go together a little different. For example, in the U.S., these four components are a little different than maybe what it looks like in sub-Saharan Africa, but they're still there, the different plays on things. That's why we have human trafficking that we call multifaceted of the reasons why people get involved. Big one that we want to talk about today, and very appropriate with our news going on, unfortunately, is wars, conflict, famine, and natural disasters, which we have had all of these for years. But every year, which this year has been a crazy amount of increase, these things cause economic hardship. Have you noticed that sometimes you hear about an earthquake in a place and you're looking at the news and you're like, first thing I thought of, these poor people, they were already suffering so much before the earthquake came. They already lived in housing that was not something we would consider livable here. They're already struggling to eat, feed their family. Sometimes there's a famine in that area, and now they have an earthquake. That makes even more economic loss and hardship. So dangerous living conditions, all that spikes refugees. The refugee numbers go higher. That increases the vulnerability, and what do we have? Perfect storm. All the other things that are normally have to be there for human trafficking to happen, this makes it almost inevitable. I want to give you a couple definitions before we talk about more with refugees. Just to clarify, the UNHCR, which is the United Nations, the refugee arm, defines a refugee as a person forced to flee their country because of violence or persecution. So the person is not in their country. They left. An IDP, which is an internally displaced person, is someone they forced to flee their home, but they don't actually cross the border. Like they went from one part of Sudan to another, the northern to the southern part. They are still in their country, but they left their home. Both are extremely vulnerable, but that's the difference in terms. So when you see the numbers, and sometimes they'll say IDPs or sometimes refugees, that's the difference. Both left their home. Both were from could be from conflict. And IDP is also when you're fleeing because of natural disaster. So there's a link that you're kind of building up to this in your mind. I'm sure going, oh, I can see that. Where if you're forced to leave your home, you now don't, whether you were rich before you left or not, you had to leave everything. If an earthquake smashed your house, no amount of money just built you a new house, all of a sudden you're forced to leave. You face things you never thought possible. And then again, most of these things seem like they happen in places where it's already real, real poor. So these people become now vulnerable who might not have been before. So the refugee crisis causes human trafficking just to flourish. The UN Secretary General stated in 2021, I thought this was just a crazy number, migrants account for more than half of trafficked persons in the world. So when you see a human trafficking documentary, or you look up statistics and you see the number, 25 million people that are trafficked or that we believe they're in a trafficking situation in the world today, the United Nations believes about half of those or more than half of those actually are migrants. That changes our perspective when you hear about refugee situations then. Okay, wow, there's a large number coming from the refugee population. Here's some statistics. As of May 2023, this year, there's about 110 million individuals that were forcibly displaced around the world from their home. That's the largest increase we've had ever, at least in our history that we're recording it. And you know, the war in Ukraine is one of the big proponents why this year, why there's so many. And other deadly conflicts that have been going on, some of them for years. We have around 35 million refugees that we're accounting for, 62 million internally displaced people, 5 million asylum seekers, and 5 million people in need of international protection. Just think about those numbers for a bit. That's a lot of people. It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around that. And here's just some pictures of migrants fleeing danger in different areas, and some are in the middle where you're setting up tents, and this is where they're living. This should have bells going off in your head. Very vulnerable. These are the top two right now in the refugee crisis. These pictures up here, several of them are from the actual taken from Syrians fleeing their country. Syria has the top number at 6.8 million. That's 25% of the global refugee population are from Syria. They've had cases of people when they flee. So they flee from Syria. They're going to go to another country. Usually it's Lebanon, Iraq, Jordan, Turkey, many more, but those are the ones close by. There's been hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of cases of labor trafficking. Because you get to another country, you need to work, you want to feed your family, maybe your family didn't make it, or maybe they did. Either way, you need to send money, and traffickers know that. Oh, here's some Syrians they came across. They're going to need, I'll force them to work for me and never pay them. And who are they going to tell? They're a refugee in another land. They have no voice. And that happens over and over and over with refugees. And then Ukraine. Right now, there's 5 million refugees. I'm sure that's gone up from this figure, which was from September. 16% of the global refugee population Ukrainians represent. So a lot of the refugees go to one spot. In Ukraine, often they went to Romania. About 80,000 Ukrainian refugees are now in Romania. So I did a survey. How many of you guys have heard of an incident right now in the last few months of human trafficking among the Ukrainians that fled? And the Ukrainians, the ones who responded, almost 100%, 97% to be exact, said, oh yeah, we've heard of it. That's a really high number. Usually if I asked in here, who in here knows someone who's been trafficked? I don't think we'd have 97% say they would. But this is how prevalent it is in the refugee population. And I will make a note to say the Ukrainians, I have several Ukrainian really good friends. They have told me when this war broke out, immediately they were like, oh my goodness, this is going to be horrible. Well, yes, war is horrible. What are you talking about? Because Ukrainians are always been targeted for human trafficking because people like their women. Wherever they go and sell them, they like the way they look. They make money. And so this is going to be horrible. Sure enough, it is. One good friend of mine just came back from Ukraine, and she said it's bad. She went to her town where she's from and said there's a lot of reports coming back. It's not good. So there's also others in the world. You might have been to some of these places or read about them. I just wanted to mention them. We have South Sudan. 4 million Sudanese have been forced from their home. 2.3 million left the country. Afghanistan, 1 in 10 Afghans is a refugee. It's a lot. And that's also just from natural disasters as well, as you know from the news and the ongoing conflict. We have Congo. They have the highest displacement in Africa. Lots of refugees. The thing is that the DRC also hosts people that are fleeing from their country. So you have two things going on. They have the refugee camps there, but they have those from that are in the Congo that are fleeing because of persecution in some way. So you have both of those. We have the Rohingya crisis, where they have 1.1 million are now living in the world's largest refugee camp in Bangladesh. Again, those numbers might be more or less, but it's a lot. Can you imagine? That's a lot of people that have left their home and are just there. They don't have any kind of hope going forward. Just we're just going to live here. A lot of vulnerability. The last ones we have are Somalia, which has been making news since I was a little girl about the drought and just the utter hunger in that country. And they also have conflict in Sudan. That this would be what we Sudan used to be a northern and southern. This is when you say South Sudan, that's South Sudan. This would be the northern Sudan. They're also asylum for refugees, and they have people fleeing from there. They're mostly Muslim, and a lot of the northern Sudanese, we used to call northern, which is now Sudan, flees to the south because of persecution. But then other people from other countries flee to North Sudan to get out of their country. So you have just a whole place full of refugees, high vulnerability again. And then Central African Republic as well has had violence since 1960. A lot of you weren't even born then. I wasn't born then. That's a lot of years of conflict, a lot of years of vulnerability. And then lately, the Venezuela, they've had right now increasing every year, every year, every year at our border down on Texas-Mexico border. We have a lot of Venezuelans coming through more than ever because they're now about 7 million migrants in the world because the conflict just escalated in the last, really in the last few months, but the last few years for sure. So, speaking of the border, can't go on without mentioning that. This is my hometown, right at the U.S. border. In the last few years, I know you guys have watched the news and you'll see pictures of the migrants coming to the U.S. That's been the highest in our history. We've had 2.8 million with encounters as of September 2023. So that's 9 months. We haven't even finished our year out, and that many migrants have had encounters with authorities versus last year's 2.7 million. I want to say this is just people that had encounters. This isn't the ones that just came in the country. Problem with that is a lot of people thought they were being smuggled in. Okay, just lay aside all your political ideas. This has nothing to do with politicalness. This is just facts, okay? Some people think, I'm in another country. I'm hungry. I'm poor. I'm being drug cartels have attacked me, which happens all the time. They're like, I got to get out of here. I've heard of the land of the free and the brave. Let me try to get up there. They're trying to get up here, okay? They go up from Central America, southern Mexico, trying to come up to the border. Then they're going to get in, and someone says, hey, I can take you in. I'll smuggle you in for $8,000. That's all you've saved up. That's all you even have. You give it to them. You get across the border. You're free. You go up to Chicago and try to find a job. That's smuggling. The difference when trafficking is when you do that same exact scenario, but when the person takes you across for $8,000, and I'm throwing that number out there, can be more or less, they say, oh, okay, now we crossed into Texas, and I'm going to take you now where you're going to stay. And where they take them is actually a place where they're going to work as a sex slave or in labor trafficking for years and years, and you can't get out of it. You're here with no passport. You don't, most of the time, don't know the language. You don't know our customs. You don't know that that's not what you're supposed to do because you got in here illegal anyway. And now we have a trafficking situation where someone who was trying to come find a better life and trying to get there, whatever they, however they thought they could, is now being trafficked. And the traffickers know that. So it's been skyrocketing. We have like 60% of unaccompanied minors that crossed right on our U.S.-Mexico border are being caught by the cartels. They're being abused in child pornography and in drug trafficking. This number probably went up because that was like from last year. It's very much a problem we're facing with these kids. So the overwhelmed border agents can only do so much. Like they're trying to catch them, trying to get them vetted to see where they're going to go stay with or send them back home. But in the meantime, here's people going, hey, I'll take them. I'm their uncle. I'll take care of this kid. Or this family, come stay with me. I'll house them for you. It's like, okay, thanks. We got 8,000 coming through a day. And a lot of times that's, it really isn't an uncle, and it really isn't someone who has their best interest. A lot of times it's going to be a trafficker. These are some pictures from the U.S.-Mexico border. You just see the sheer numbers. So it kind of should, like I said, bells go off in your head. Wow, vulnerable people. A lot of vulnerability going on. And so I kind of went through some of this slide already, why it's such a big deal. I do want to say that arrests have rose 50% in human trafficking since the border has increased with migrants. We've had arrests 50% more than last year for those that were trafficked. We're catching more, which means there is more. The convictions have gone up. We have like 80% more. Then those are trafficked in the U.S. have been found to be immigrants. This is why it's so important to have both dynamics, the refugee crisis and then the children who are being targeted online and being targeted for pornography, and they're mostly runaways in the U.S. That's a big target in the U.S. But then we have the migrant crisis separate. Over here you have them that are coming across and just vulnerable, and that's another target. So we have two things going on, the same result, but different ways that they're being trafficked. Okay, this comes down to what is my role? So I kind of gave you a quick overview of what's going on. Let's talk a little bit about what you can do. Well, educate, implement, and engage. We'll go through this kind of quick because I do want to get your questions. In one study, they found that 87.8%, which is almost 90%, of trafficking survivors, said that I have been in a healthcare provider many times when I was being trafficked. Some said 68.3% were seen in an emergency department. One survivor said, during the time I was on the street, I went to hospitals, urgent care clinics, women's health clinics, private doctors. No one asked me anything every time I went to a doctor. They just, you get in, you get out, you've seen them, we got to see more patients. And I get it. I'm on the other side of that. A lot of times we're in a hurry. Even in mission clinics, what I do, you look out the window in the morning, you're like, there's 500 people, and there's two of us. So you're like, let's hurry up. And somehow these people are just going through, mainly because a lot of us aren't aware of what are the signs. And sometimes we're just hurried. But that's why I'm so glad to see you guys here. Can we sit down, think about it, learn about it, and then we're going to put it in action. So you know the specific indicators. What does a person might look like if they're being trafficked? A lot of times they have poor hygiene. Sometimes you can tell evidence of trauma, bruises, cuts. They can be disoriented because a lot of them are on drugs. They've been forced to be on drugs, many of them, so they get attached to the trafficker because now they need him for drugs. Other times they drink alcohol and do drugs because they need to get through their situation. Either way, you often will see that. One of the big ones is, does the person accompanying them answer all the questions for the patient? And those of you who worked in healthcare pediatric populations for a while, you know that's also some of those signs that I'm going to talk about are signs of child abuse. Well, it can be you have an adult in there and the person's answering all the questions. How are you today? Oh, he's fine. He just broke his arm. And how old are you? Then they answer, oh, he's 40. And they just keep going and going. You're like, this is a grown adult. Why is this other grown adult? Oh, he's shy. I'm answering for him. That's happened. I've had that happen with a patient. And you're, okay, red flag. Something's going on. Why is he not letting him answer? Or why is he not letting that girl be alone in the room? Well, the trafficker doesn't want you to talk to them and get information out. So being aware of those things is good because that can help more than anything else. The physical indicators, some of you will be like, that's kind of obvious, but just to state them, we see a lot of STDs, malnutrition, weight loss, sleep deprivation, skin rashes, dental trauma. A lot of them have gotten beat up either because they're in forced labor situation and maybe they disobeyed on something. I had a patient that came with that. He had hearing loss in one ear because he'd been hit so many times on that side of his face. Mental health. Definitely 100% depression. This study found PTSD 30 to 70%. I'll go out here and say I find it always close to 100% PTSD. Phobias, panic attacks, many mental health disorders. Where do you find them? Where are they working? Like, I haven't seen anybody that looks like that. Usually you've seen the sign maybe that says hidden in plain sight. It's sometimes we don't know. They don't maybe not look like what I just described. Maybe just look like a worker who's tired and any other worker. But they're there in doing domestic work, obviously in escort services and illicit massages. That's kind of what we see in our head where they'd be working. But other places like health and beauty services. What about landscaping, construction? There's lots of places where they have people working for free. If any of you came to our talk last year, my friend Jennifer, who did the talk with me, she works in Houston, and this is an actual patients of hers that were trafficked. And when they came out, they said, she goes, can I take a picture? I want to show this to other people. And they said, please, please do. Show people what was being done to us, how we're being branded. If you had a patient like this, you might think, ah, that girl's just probably a wild girl out there, and kind of, you know, her boyfriend, just, she's loved him so much, she decided to put his initials on there, JM. Not so. That could be true. Absolutely. Does that happen? Absolutely. In this case, though, and in many cases, they were branded. And here's some of the tattoos. This one of them, I don't know if you can see it, it says Hood Princess, and has a bag of money. And then here's another one. There's, you know, a dog there with the bags of money, and this other one has lots of different, some of them are from gang signs, others just that pimp, that's his sign. So what else can you do? Implement your knowledge. You learned a little bit about it. I hope you dig in deeper. Now implement it. What do I do if I think someone might be a victim of sex trafficking or labor trafficking? You call the police if they're in imminent danger. That stands, you know that. But the National Trafficking Hotline is often, if they're not in danger, is actually way better, because it'll hook you up with resources in your town, in your state, where you can maybe call, especially if in your place you don't even have anything. I've had several people come and talk to me already just yesterday and today, say, we don't have anything in my town. Call the National Trafficking Hotline. It's 888-3737-888. Kind of memorize that number. Have it placed in your place of work. Something else you can do. If you're in a position to be able to ask screening questions, ask them. When you're doing the exam, taking their vitals, and you're suspecting some things, okay, your name, you're getting their data. So where do you live? What do you do for work? Can you leave your work? Is anybody forcing you to do this? Have you been threatened with harm if you quit? Just get the conversation going. There's some good screening questionnaires I'll give you at the end. You can where you can look them up. Healthcare workers. All right. What's your next step? You say you already say, yeah, we've taken the online modules. We've did the CMEs. We've heard these talks. We watched the movie. What can we do now? Like, I'm prepared, but I want to do more. The one thing that we're working on at CMDA, which I'm a part of, is at our trafficking commission, we would like to really start making it easier for those of you who would like to offer maybe telemedicine services to a refugee safe house, a shelter. There's like domestic violence shelters. There's many of those across the country just for human trafficking victims. If you would say, you know, I can do that. I can give a day of the month or of the week and say, hey, you guys need a doctor, call me. I'll do telemedicine with you and call in what you need. That's a big blessing, because they struggle. Those shelters and centers that are not supported by our government, which most of them are privately, are NGOs or based out of a church, they struggle for raising money. And that'd be great if you could offer your services. What's something else? You can volunteer at a refugee or a free clinic or an immigrant clinic if you have that in your area. If you're like, nope, we're not anywhere near that, what about at a homeless shelter? You'd be surprised where you find victims. And then the last one, which we're going to talk really quick about, is initiate, develop, if you would like to on your own, but we have some that are already developed. You can initiate a response protocol at your local hospital, at your clinic. What does that mean? It just means that you are helping your clinic have a way where everybody knows what to do if you suspect a victim. What do you do besides the phone call? Who do we put them in touch with? So everybody knows. So you're sure that, oh, I was off that day. Oh, man, I wasn't there, and I'm the one who knows. No, everybody knows. Get them trained. So the staff knows. It helps the interaction with the victims. People know how to talk to victims. It improves this confidence, and it prepares you for a threatening situation. So you can give best care to your victim. This is just an example. Texas, the Health and Human Service has a resource called Heart Training, and there it's about hearing, evaluating, activating, and then resource and training, the acronym HEART. And that's just one example of a protocol you can use in your own place of getting people ready, and your staff and your coworkers. It basically says you're going to develop a screening tool, you're going to utilize a screening tool, and you have a referral network, which is huge, because most people are very disconnected. You don't know that this person has services for free healthcare, and this one offers shelter, and this one over here has mental counseling. Often we don't know that. We're like, oh, I didn't know you were doing that. So this kind of gives a referral network, and it helps with reporting and just with your staff training. And the basic thing you really want to do is get everyone in your team to remain aware. Also have a trauma-informed response and use careful language. And these are some of the points of contact. Front line is your receptionist. Midline is the clinicians who are seeing the patient. Finish line means that they're going to go check out, get a follow-up appointment, pay their whatever they needed to pay. Is everyone at every stage in that process know what to do, know what to look for? For example, if you're in the front line and you're checking people in, have you noticed the client's or the patient's physical condition? How do they seem to be emotionally? Is there somebody accompanying them answering all the questions like we talked about? Do they seem a little hesitant? Then you have people that are the clinicians, the nurses, those doing the lab work. Same exact questions, except what other red flags did maybe someone else miss? For example, when you're checking in reception, you usually don't take off your shirt and show what's going on your shoulder, which you would in the back. You would say, yeah, I hurt my shoulder. When you took that shirt off, did you notice bruises? Did you notice different colors of bruises that maybe they've been abused for a while? The frontline wouldn't have been able to see that, but you as a clinician would. Then when you finish up, okay, you have the patients, something seems off, you're checking them out. Did you give them any kind of information? Do you have brochures you can hand them? Sometimes it has to be kind of secretive, especially if they're with somebody and there's ways you can kind of slip information to a patient. Or are they by themselves and you can hand them, hey, do you need help? You can call us. We're a safe place. Do you have that available? Do you have all the information about the patient? Maybe they were like, well, I don't know my address. I don't really know what to tell you on certain things. Can you get a little more information from them? It might be life and death for that patient. And then, of course, we want to talk about trauma-informed care a little bit. I'll just go through it quickly because some of you definitely already know about this, and you can research a little more about what it means. A trauma-informed care is meaning that you're going to have a trustworthy, safe, transparent place for these patients, that you're listening to them and recognizing their trauma. For example, you realize, how does trauma affect people? A lot of times, especially being a victim of human trafficking, you think, oh my goodness, I'm going to go out there and get them out of that safe house, or I see that patient, I'm going to be right there, tell them about what we got, we're going to get them out, we're going to provide for them. Hey, you want to come? And they look at you and be like, no, that's okay, no thanks. You're like, what? Why would they not want to come? Well, you understand, if you study it, research it, thought about it, being traumatized affects people very differently. Often you're not just as in a domestic violence, you're not just often ready to say goodbye for so many reasons. And for victims of human trafficking, a lot of times the trauma is they've been threatened a lot. If you leave, I kill your family. Not just kill you. No, it's your family. And that gets them. Because some of them don't want to live, but they think, if I run away or if I take my own life, they're going to go kill my family. That can't happen. So realize how trauma affects people. They don't want to talk. Sometimes they blame themselves. Sometimes they don't even know they're a victim. They think that was their boyfriend, so he's not trafficking them. They're just doing favors for their boyfriend. They're being trafficked. They don't know it. You recognize the signs of trauma. We talked about some of those. Make sure everyone in your place knows what is mean to have a safe environment and what does it mean to be trained for that. Resist traumatizing them just means that you're going to not ask them, hey, tell me what happened. Go start from the beginning. And then he did what? And then what happened? And you were working all day in the farm. What did you have to do? You don't need all the details. You're trying to get them to a safe spot. Sometimes that's a trigger for too much pain for them at this point. So where we're at in healthcare, we want to help heal. So maybe don't have them go through all that. And that's part of trauma-informed care. We don't want to re-trigger and bring up those painful events at that moment. There's the number again. You know, call your also Department of Homeland Security. Call your local law enforcement. Some of those places actually have good things set up. Some don't. Some have no idea what to do. I want to ask you another question. What other hats do you wear? How many people here teach a Sunday school class? See hands? Okay, several. Yeah. Work in youth groups in any kind? Yep. Several hands all over. Okay. What about in your school? Do you lead any kind of club or outreach or a team, or are you on a baseball team, a soccer, are you a coach of some kind? All these have an open door to talk to people about human trafficking. There's curriculums you can get online for free, talk to people about. The Blue Campaign has actual great article, how to talk to youth about human trafficking. Parents, who's a parent here? Okay, I see lots of hands. Grandparent? Hey, hands, are you an aunt and uncle? You have kids in your life, basically. Everyone here has some kids in their life, brothers and sisters. learn the risks online for kids. Even those of you who are young, the risks are actually different now for those in middle school. Even those of you who are maybe still in high school or just in college or med school, it's getting worse and worse. So what you think you know might already be a little outdated. Learn the risks. Learn what's going on. Learn what the new tools are that traffickers are using, those who target kids. Figure out what they are. Talk to your kids about it. Talk to your friends. Talk to your neighbors if there's kids. If you're doing mission work, which a lot of people are, which is awesome, that's my heart right there. When you go and work in emergency settings, say there's a flooding, even in the U.S., you know, a lot of you probably went to some of the flooding areas. I've talked to some of you who have. And you're doing your emergency work, you're offering shelter and food, health care. Keep your eyes open. Now that you know some of the red flags, keep your eyes open when you're talking to people. Being aware and knowing is half the battle. And then for short and long-term missions, we have several mission trips that we go to that specifically targets victims of human trafficking or those that are potential victims. And we often, it's about building relationships with them. You can do that in your own hometown, like my friend who is in the Houston brothels goes to the Chinese, where a lot of Chinese people are being trafficked and prostituted. And they make friends. They go every week. They go every month. They talk. They bring food. They have relationships. And you'd be surprised how that one act can get people to open up. And then mentoring children, we talked about that. You know, if there's a Boys and Girls Club in your area or any other kind of organization, your church or somewhere else where you think, there's some kids I can help. You helping them in there, especially if there's a lot of vulnerabilities going on with a dysfunctional family, with poverty, with maybe not the greatest parent figures in the home, you stepping in is possibly more than likely preventing a trafficking situation. That's huge too. Not just going to the brothels and rescuing, which is amazing if you can do that. But I kind of suspect not everyone in this room is going to be able to do that. And not everyone is going to have tons of money to send to safe houses to help support it. Some of you are going to have to get creative and say, what can I do on the prevention side? Where can I give my time and talents? How can I call a place and say, hey, what do you need? I can come. I can come help wherever you want. That's all part of it. We're all a body. These are some places that have the protocol toolkits, the Blue Campaign, Shared Hope International, the Polaris Project, Engage Together, A21 Campaign, just a few. There's some others, but these have great tools. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's some screening tools that are these organizations that it's kind of like this is also one that's a four-step approach to recognize human trafficking if you want to have it in your clinic. There's a history, what to ask, the physical exam, what to look for, and how to respond. It's just an example. There's many. There's a lot out there. The main thing is to find it and learn about it, implement it. We also have some medical education things. I, of course, have to advertise the best one out there, which is CMDA. That's the trafficking person ones, and that I'm the chair of the commission, so I'm going to give you a big, strong push to go to our website and look up our modules. There's 12 of them. You can take those. If you're not a CMDA member, we'd love to have you be one. That's a whole nother lecture I can give you, but come by our booth and we'll talk to you about it. This is something for parents, anybody else who has kids. Know that there's different apps on the phone that the kids use, which is crazy. Like, you know, there's a hidden calculator that's actually a vault that they can store stuff in. So when you grab their phone, you're like, what are you texting? And you look at it. Yeah, they might have it in a secret spot. So you got to know these things. And we don't know normally. We're kind of busy, especially you guys are working three jobs and students, and you're like. And then there's others like Snapchat, which can be just, you know, innocent, but they also be talking to people and you won't know because it erases the chat. You can't see it. Or you don't think that that's where they're talking. A lot of these are listed here, a lot of the ones where it has been documented and found that people that are preying on children and looking for new victims of human trafficking have used these to talk to victims. There's references if you need them. I can send them to you. Or I don't know if you download this. I just want to leave you with these two verses that you can help bring hope to the darkness. This was a very dark topic, and we barely just touched the surface on it. But you can bring hope. Psalm 82:3 says, to defend the cause of the weak and fatherless, maintain the rights of the poor and oppressed. And Proverbs 31:8-9 says, open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of those who are destitute. Open your mouth. Judge righteously. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. You can bring hope to the darkness. We are the body of Christ. We are his hands and feet. You might think, well, I'm not that important. I'm not the head. Yeah, maybe you're the toenail. Has any of you ever, guys, ever missed a toenail and tried to walk? It hurts. You need that toenail. So don't think, I can't do that much. I'm just going to go mentor a few kids. No, that's huge. Prevention is big. You're a mental health counselor. You can go counsel. That's big. Yes, there's big, huge organization doing great things, but you're part of the body of Christ. So I encourage you, find, pray, ask where the Lord wants you to serve. I was going to play the song, but it's not going to play. This was Send Me. It's a beautiful song. If you listen to it, it's just saying, Lord, I'll go to the broken and the bruised. I'll send me. So I ask you, what's your answer? The Lord's asking each of you something, some bigger than others. Will you be his voice? Also, I'd like to invite you to become involved with the CMDA Commission on Human Trafficking. I'm the chair of that commission, and we would love to have some new members. We just ask that you join CMDA and then go through the modules. Look through if you've already been involved in trafficking. Necessarily might not have to go through all those. If you've done others, just come talk to me. We'd love to have more help. We're thinking of ideas, how to reach more people, how to get awareness out there. And we'd also like to come get a cup of coffee with us. We're at the main fellowship hall down the floor. We have free coffee and chairs, and I'm sitting right next to the coffee. That was strategic. So come by and talk to me if you want, and we'd love to have you join. And that is it. Thank you very much. If we have any questions, I would like to. And then I wanted my friend Linda to say a few things if there's time. She says no. Oh, yeah. Thank you for reminding me. What do you guys think before I'll give my opinion? So what? Anyone who's seen the movie and you hear kind of a talk like this or you've heard another one, what do you think? Based on the movie, what you know, do you think it's – any thoughts?
Good. Movies.
Good movies. Okay. Anyone else? Thank you for that. That's absolutely correct, and it is happening. Thank you for sharing that. Anyone else?
Yeah. Can we have access to your slides?
Absolutely. If you do, you can. I don't ever brought up. Yeah, come by my table next to the coffee. Don't forget CMDA. Oh, I have a table. You can sign up, and I'll send them to you. They're also uploaded on if you're all here, so you should be able to have access to it. There should be uploaded online. But if not, I can send them to you. Yes.
The second thing I wanted to
sorry.
Say was we just had a fall festival at our church, open to the community. We had about 1,000 kids there, and there was somebody wandering through the crowd soliciting children. And so we have a safety team that is participating in a lot of events. They found the guy and took him back to his car, and there were two other people in there, and they were basically soliciting children.
And this is in the U.S. Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, right here, right
in our Washington.
Wow.
This is to say, I work, I'm a pediatrician, but I work in labor and delivery. And the other thing is that, as you pointed out, there's a lot of other, shall we say, comorbidities or things that lead them into this situation. And they often don't feel at liberty to say, even in the U.S., because, for instance, in labor and delivery, they come in and they're positive for drugs. And our reaction to that closes that door. I think, we need to hold ourselves in check about, this is your zillionth pregnancy or you're positive for fentanyl or whatever. Because if we put up that barrier, they're never going to say, because he gives me the fentanyl to shut me up or whatever.
Yeah.
So we have to recognize all those comorbidities, but not just recognize them, but our reaction to them. Or we're never going to have to.
Yeah, thank you so much for saying that. that's exactly what is holding ourselves in check. Our reactions usually are kind of like, ugh. But one of the things for the trauma-informed care says that you need to watch your language. And we, so much on this, we could literally talk till next week on it. So many things on each one. But yes, thank you. That's so true. The way we react, often you just think, oh, you know, this person's, how come they're doing this themselves? You wonder that, and they might not be doing it to themselves. So thank you. Anyone else?
I work in the ER and our hospital system, since we have this education, is now implemented. Part of triage is to raise a virtual red flag. So when the patient goes back, we actually have a screening for human trafficking.
That's good.
Algorithm to follow to contact the hospital.
Oh, that's great. So y'all are on the mark right there. That's good.
Our Texas hospitals have actually helped facilitate the rescue of a few patients.
That's good. Great. That's amazing. And we can all do that in just implementing it. And now they have it in place, and now it's being used, and you guys can do that.
Something I'll just mention that we saw in our own case love was people, especially in the younger population, moving away from tattoos and moving towards jewelry as a form of orienting. So, like, it was a red flag for us to see kids with, like, very nice jewelry.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's great. For those of you who didn't hear, a lot of pimps and people that are trafficking, they're not branding their victims with tattoos as much, maybe because we're on it. I'm sure in certain areas, she said that they have jewelry now that's a red flag. So it's good to stay on top of these things. And because, yeah, you might not see that. You're like, well, I didn't see it. She didn't have any tattoos. She looked normal. She had a lot of jewelry. Must have a rich uncle. Yeah. Anyone else? Anything else? Either. For those you might not have heard, saw lots of victims, they're coming now with shaved heads. And that's a red flag. It's a punishment for them if they did something wrong. Which they get punished a lot because they got to keep that trauma bond where you punish them, then reward them, then be mean to them and rape them and kick them and they did something wrong and shave their head. And then you're going to go back now and love on them and you know, make them love you again. And it's a big deal you see in domestic violence as well. But yeah, shaved heads, that's... And this is why I love having talks like this, into getting together and sharing, because you hear different people from different regions go, oh, I've seen this, and that helps your knowledge bank. Over here, anybody? So I was in getting my master's in public health and had to do a presentation at the end of the program. And I honestly don't know how I came across hearing about it. It was from Shared Hope. There wasn't much out there then. This is like 20 years ago. And I had not heard much about human trafficking at all. And there wasn't, it wasn't quite that long ago. But anyway, it was a while back. And I hadn't heard that much. And that's how I got involved. I did a little research on that and kept going and going. And I am a full-time missionary. I've been since college. And so I've already seen what it is on the border and in Mexico, Nicaragua, where I usually am. That's how I got into medicine, actually, was because there was no doctors or nurses in the area. So I was like, I'm going to go to med school because I need to help. So then it was kind of like a flow. Then learning about human trafficking, like, well, I bet that's everywhere. I just didn't know. I didn't know the signs. And so it's kind of a snowball effect. And I bet a lot of you guys have that same story where you hear about it and then, you know, stay in prayer. God will show you, open your eyes of where you can help, what you can do. So we take teams to other countries and do prevention with kids and just talking about human trafficking, but also just talking, like having a vacation Bible school with them and doing medical care, treating them. That's all part of prevention. But to CMDA, I did need to mention this. I thought we were more out of time, kind of rushed through it, but we have actually a few more minutes. We have some mission trips. If you're interested, they fill up very quick. But we have some mission trips that go to a place. Like we went to Bolivia last year. I didn't go, but the Global Health Outreach went. By the time I tried to sign up, it was already full. So they go to a specific area and work with people that are in trafficking, in prostitution. I have gone to Nicaragua several times. There's a place called House of Hope that CMDA used to go to a lot. I don't know if you guys have been. But it's really cool because what you do is you might say, what do you do different than another mission trip? Well, we get a van, go down to the red light district, and you invite the women to come. Hey, we got free health care. They're like, ooh, yeah. A lot of them have been working all night. And they're like, oh, I can do this. And their pimps let them go. They go to go get free health care. That's what they think they're doing. Well, they do get that. Love on them. You give them hygiene supplies. You talk to them. You pray with them. They have a great day. Feed them. And then you take them back. Do that again another day. Get another day. You keep taking the van. Bring them back. If you were on the team, you'd be there giving the health care. Then back where they're taken is a shelter where they house women who can get away and learn a trade and be safe and then eventually go out on their own. Being a part of a mission trip like that is amazing. One thing you find at the beginning is you offer this to people, and then a lot of times they're like, okay, why do you think that? Well, they don't know you. They don't trust you. Yeah, you gave them health care, but I don't know you. And so it takes a while to build a relationship. And usually by the end of every trip, there's a couple that'll say, okay, can I come? Yep, I'll pick you up tomorrow. So the van comes again like normal to pick up everyone who's going for the health care, and you're going to supposedly bring them all back, and they're missing two. We're like, yes. So, and then, you know, you keep relationships with them. The people that work in those countries will keep going back and offering and just building the relationship. So those kind of things you can do if you're not sure where to get started, maybe sign up for a mission trip like that. It's really awesome. So I encourage everyone to do that once in your life.
Do you have any advice for
Oh, that's a good question. So a lot of it would be on just getting around that organization and finding out if they're not big online, like maybe they don't have a big presence online and they're smaller and you're like, I really don't know anything about this. Getting around them is a big deal. You keep your ears and eyes open just as you would if you're around victims. Like you're trying to figure out in the healthcare setting if someone's a victim or not. Going to an organization, just being around them, knowing someone who's there, maybe taking a friend to, volunteering a little, you'll learn so much by being around them. And you're right, some things are not as ethical as others. But hopefully the majority are, but that would be a good way just to be around them. Also, if they are bigger online, look them up. Look up there. A lot of them will have places you can get more information, or is there anybody else we can talk to, and talk to them almost like you're doing interview where you're going to check out their resources, the references.
I saw there you said at one point to utilize your local legal, law enforcement. And I guess I had thought that it was different, that for human trafficking and domestic violence to not involve police because of the threats to family members. And yet, at the same time, you're obligated, if you really do think this person is in imminent danger of homicide, I mean, you do need to intervene. So how do you weigh that balance? Do you, obviously, you want to separate the two if that person's in the room, but then if the patient says, no, do not call the police, and yet you're, how do you navigate that?
So if they're in danger, and you know they're in danger, the law is you have to call the police, right? Most of the time, I shouldn't say most of the time, a lot of times, they're not really in danger. They were beat up or they got hurt in a labor, they're in labor, like working at a farm labor situation, and they, got hurt by the axe and they just need to be stitched up. They're not imminent danger. They're in danger because their life's in danger, but not in that moment, right? So in those cases, that's why we use the hotline. The National Trafficking Hotline is way better because it'll say, this is where you have a resource you can call versus the police. The police have to be called if they're, think that person's going to kill me or they're going to take their own life. You have to by law. But most of the cases, you don't have to call the police. You rather call them with the network that you have in your community. It's people that are working with victims, offering care to victims, know the legal ramifications. And that's the other thing on one of my slides, which I didn't get to say. If you're interested in law or know people that are, we need lawyers that are going to do pro bono and fight for these victims. Because it is different. A lot of times it looks like you're here illegally. You're being a prostitute, and you have drugs in you, like one of you guys mentioned. So, yeah, get back to your country. Why'd you bring this stuff in? And they were being trafficked, maybe even smuggled across the border. And so you don't want to put them back in the hands of the police who are going to be like, wow, what are you doing here? Get out. I'm not bashing the police. I love police. I'm just saying they're not trained. They don't know. And maybe you don't even know. So we want to put them in the hands of a referral system that are trained and that know. So the best thing is to find out in your area who you call. And that's the importance of a protocol. So everybody knows what to call when it's not imminent danger. Except for children, yes. We're talking about 18 and up. Children is a different. Oh, time to go. That was another question. I love the movie. I think the movie was awesome. I do realize it doesn't hit maybe what we have in the U.S., but it wasn't. It was their stories. And the movie was great. I recommend you guys go see it. Have a great day. Come by and see me. Get your coffee.